Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Classic FM. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, country, rock, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one. It was on this day that the very first gold record album was presented by the Recording Industry Association of America, RIAA. Which album was it that won that first gold record? Was it A, Moonlight Serenade by Glenn Miller? Was it B, Songs for Swinging Lovers by Frank Sinatra? Was it C, the soundtrack to Oklahoma by Rodgers and Hammerstein? Or was it D, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band by the Beatles? The first gold record album. Which recording was that anyway? And question number two, The Monkees, conceived by television producers in 1965 as a fictional band for a TV sitcom, and who had such pop hits as I'm a Believer, opened a national tour today. Who was their opening act for that tour? Was it A, Lawrence Welk? Was it B, Jimi Hendrix? Was it C, The Beatles? Or was it D, Kiss? So who was it that opened for the Monkees national tour anyway? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of July 7th. Well, it was on this very day back in 1882 that composer Percy Aldridge Granger was born. He achieved a reputation as a brilliant concert pianist, beginning in London in 1901. In 1906, Granger became a friend of Edvard Grieg, under whose influence he began collecting and recording English folk songs by means of wax cylinder phonographs. Percy Granger, born today, 1882. And it was on this very day, back in 1955, that the Bill Haley and his Comets single, Rock Around the Clock, hit number one on Billboard's pop charts. This was the first time a rock and roll recording accomplished this feat, 68 years ago today.
We were good, we were gold, kind of dream that can't be sold. We were right till we weren't, built a home and watched it burn. I didn't want to leave you, I didn't want to lie, started to cry but then remembered.
And in country music news, we have this article titled Megan Maroney's Sweet Sad Country. This is written by John Dolan, Rolling Stone magazine, July, August 2023. Savannah, Georgia native Megan Maroney broke out earlier this year with the must-hear country hit Tennessee Orange, a wonderful expectation-subverting ballad about the pull of family, the thrill of star-crossed love, and the religion of college football. Now she's followed that success up with Lucky, one of the best country debuts of the past few years. On Sleep on My Side, she dumps a guy because he doesn't listen to John Prine, among other deal-breaking flaws. And Trader Joe delivers bad news to a male friend who's getting cheated on. I write sad songs for sad people, she sings. Every one of them rings true. And in classical music news, robot conductor gives history-making orchestral debut in South Korea. This is published on the 3rd of July, 2023 by Sophie Alexandra Hall, published in ClassicFM.com. A robot has become the first of its kind to conduct an orchestra in South Korea in a high-profile concert hall debut last week. Standing at 1.8 meters tall, the Ever RR6 robot led the National Orchestra of Korea in a sold-out performance at the National Theater of Korea in Seoul on Friday, 30 June. The legless automaton was developed by the Korean Institute of Industrial Technology over a year ago to test whether robots could replace conductors. Equipped with two arms housing wrist and elbow joints, the machine is able to delicately replicate the baton movements of the human maestro. In a video advertisement for last Friday's performance, a senior researcher at the Korean Institute of Industrial Technology, Don Wook Lee, explained, "We got involved in this project to see how far robots can go in more creative fields like the arts and what the challenges are." The concert, titled Disproof, was conducted by both the Ever R6 and a human conductor, Soo-Yeol Choi, the artistic director of the Busan Philharmonic Orchestra. Both maestros performed separately before coming together at the end of the concert to conduct together. And in music research and technology, How It Works. This is published in the July-August 2023 Rolling Stone magazine. The fake Drake weekend that freaked everyone out this spring was almost certainly just the beginning of a wave of AI-assisted musical weirdness to come. The possibilities, some cool, some vaguely terrifying, are nearly endless and are arriving sooner than you think. Here's what's on the horizon, from dead celeb karaoke to AI mastering and more. For example, singing Elvis karaoke with Elvis's voice? When could it happen? Soon. The tech isn't far off, and the company that manages Presley's estate plans to embrace it. How about creating music just by typing descriptions? When could it happen? Now. Google recently introduced MusicLM, which attempts to do for music what ChatGPT does for text. How about NeuralNet virtual guitar amps? When could that happen? Now, companies like Neural DSP use AI-powered software to replicate highly specific tube amp setups, including Tom Morello's rig. How about resurrecting dead artists for new songs via voice cloning? When could that happen? Soon. It's happening unofficially, like one where Biggie raps Tupac's Hit 'Em Up. An authorized new release by the undead could happen soon. Well, then, how about older artists using AI models of their younger voices, even live? When could that happen? Soon. In the near future, artists like Paul McCartney could start using AI clones of their own voices live on stage as a sort of supercharged auto-tune, if they wanted to. How about songwriters pitch artists with their own voices? And how about that happening? How about now? Want to show Ariana Grande a song using her own voice? That tech is there right now. Well, then, how about AI-generated music videos? When could that happen? Now. Artists are already using AI to create music videos. Live BB Rexha, who made a trippy one for Stars. How about AI mastering? When could that happen? Now. Budget-cautious musicians can use animated sites like Landar and eMastered to put final touches on their mixes. And finally, last but not least, Grammy-winning song made without humans? When could that happen? Never. We're calling it Not Gonna Happen.
Doom, gloom, and misery. That's what you get to me.
ELO's In My Own Time introduces our rock and pop music news. It's titled Behind the Symphonic Rock Band Name Electric Light Orchestra. This is published in AmericanSongwriter.com by Tina Benitz Eve on the 25th of June 2023. Electric Light Orchestra took its name because they were combining traditional electric rock instruments along with more strings and orchestral instrumentation. Throughout the 1960s in the UK, light orchestras were smaller groups performing shorter orchestral pieces centered around symphonies, concertos, operas, and more. Formed in Birmingham, England in 1970, Electric Light Orchestra, ELO, released their eponymous debut in 1971. The band continued on with hits Mr. Blue Sky, Evil Woman, Living Thing, Sweet Talkin' Woman, Telephone Line, Turn to Stone, Don't Bring Me Down, and more. The band continued to release more hits throughout the 80s and even back the 1980 film soundtrack Xanadu, along with Olivia Newton-John. Lynn was also transitioning into production, working on George Harrison's 1987 album Cloud Nine and Tom Petty's 1989 debut Full Moon Fever. The trio eventually formed the Traveling Wilburys with Bob Dylan, formed just before Orbison's death in 1988, and continued on through 1990. Electric Light Orchestra disappeared throughout the 90s, and following the release of Zoom in 2001, featuring Ringo Starr and George Harrison. In 2023, Lynn was inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame.
As I set myself free in my own time, in my own time. In my mind, I'm gone to Carolina. Can't you see the sunshine? Can't you just feel the moonshine? Ain't it just like a friend of mine to hit me from behind?
Yes, I'm gone to Carolina in my mind.
James Taylor's Carolina on My Mind introduces our local music news. It's titled, Who from North Carolina is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Here's the list. This is written by Martha Quillen, May the 13th, 2023, News and Observer. With Link Ray's November induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, North Carolina grows its array of individual musicians and bands celebrated by the Cleveland, Ohio institution. The Hall of Fame's database of 365 inductees isn't searchable by the state that helped give rise to the performers, so we apologize for any omissions. Also, we claim some people who aren't NC natives, but spent enough time here to get their name on a marquee. Here's the list, starting with the artist performing in the background now. James Taylor's unmistakable sound incorporates blues, soul, pop, country, and folk, all of which he would have had access to growing up in Chapel Hill, while his father was a faculty member and then dean of the UNC School of Medicine. Taylor moved between North Carolina, Massachusetts, and then New York, playing in various bands through high school, then moved to London, where he connected with Peter Asher of Apple Records. He recorded his debut album at the same time the Beatles were making the White Album, at the same studio, and recorded Sweet Baby James in California in 1970, establishing himself and launching a career that has produced 20 studio albums so far. Taylor had a number one hit in 1971 with Carole King's You've Got a Friend. He's currently on tour with dates through September. He played PNC Arena in Raleigh in June 2022 and was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2000.
If I'm up and gone to Carolina in my mind, in my mind I'm gone to Carolina. Can't you see the sunshine? Can't you just feel the moonshine? Ain't it just like a friend of mine? You hit me from behind. Yes, I'm gone.
Link Ray, as introduced in a recent music review program, is a 2023 inductee. He was born in Dunn, North Carolina, and was known as the innovator of the power chord. His musical influence has been felt in country, gospel, and folk rock. He created the song and the sound Rumble on the spot during a Virginia dance hall performance. And then there's Elizabeth Leba Cotton, who was born and raised in what is now Carrboro, North Carolina. Cotton was a blues and folk musician, best known for a song she wrote as a child, Freight Train, inspired by the trains that rumbled past her family's home. She also wrote the song Shake Sugaree, performed by such artists as Joan Baez, Peter, Paul and Mary, Bob Dylan, Rihanna Giddens, and the Grateful Dead. Her unusual guitar playing became known as Cotton Pickin'. Cotton was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2022. Then there's Nina Simone. She was born in Tryon, North Carolina in 1933. She began playing piano at the age of three and was soon getting lessons in classical music. She began playing jazz, blues, and classical music in Atlantic City to support herself, which led to a decades-long recording career. She became a visible spokesperson for civil rights after four girls were killed in the bombing of a black church in Alabama. She was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2018. Ed King, who was inducted with the band Lynyrd Skynyrd into the Hall of Fame in 2006, spent a significant portion of his life playing guitar in bands like Smokehouse while living in Greenville and Raleigh, North Carolina. Then there's George Clinton. He was born in Kannapolis, North Carolina in 1941. He formed the doo-wop band The Parliaments and created Funkadelics, a James Brown music-inspired band. He was inducted into the R&R Hall of Fame as a member of those bands in 1997. Shirley Owens, also known as Shirley Alston Reeves, was born in Henderson, North Carolina. And as one of the original members of the girl group The Shirelles, and was credited with such songs as I Met Him on a Sunday, Dedicated to the One I Love, and Soldier Boy. In 1960, she recorded Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow, which went to number one on the charts. She was inducted with the Shirelles into the Hall of Fame in 1996. Clyde McFadder was born in Durham in 1932, and as a youngster sang in the choir of the Baptist church his father pastored. He became lead singer of the Dominoes, which recorded 60 Minute Man, and then the Drifters, which had their first number one hit on the R&B charts in the mid-1950s. His gospel style of singing was cited in his two inductions into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, as an individual in 1967, and then as a member of the Drifters in 1968. Last but not least, Ben E. King, who was born Ben Nelson in Henderson, North Carolina in 1938. King is credited with such hits as There Goes My Baby and Stand By Me, and sang lead on the Drifters' songs This Magic Moment and Save the Last Dance for Me. King was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame with the Drifters in 1968. So how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this very day that the very first gold record album was presented by the Recording Industry Association of America, RIAA. Which album was it that won that first gold record? Was it A, Moonlight Serenade by Glenn Miller? B, Songs for Swinging Lovers by Frank Sinatra? Was it C, the soundtrack to Oklahoma by Rodgers and Hammerstein? Or was it D, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band by the Beatles? Correct answer, answer C. The soundtrack to the musical Oklahoma was awarded the very first gold record album by the RIAA. As noted in RIAA.com, originally conceived to honor artist and track sound recording sales, gold and platinum awards have come to stand as a benchmark of success for any artist, whether they've just released their first song or greatest hits album. The very first gold award was earned on March the 14th, 1958, to Perry Como for his hit single, Catch a Falling Star, and followed 4 months later by the first gold album award, the cast album to Oklahoma, sung by Gordon McRae. But with time, music changes, and as technology advances, more and more people are exposed to music. When the popularity of disco music led to a huge boom in music sales in the 70s, RIAA created the Platinum Award to celebrate more than 1 million sales of a single or album. And the first Platinum Single Award was earned by Johnny Taylor's Disco Lady. In the 80s, the development of CDs increased music sales once again, and popular music went platinum more than once. So we developed the Multi-Platinum Award. The 90s led to even greater heights for music sales, and so we released the Diamond Award to celebrate the sale of 10 million copies or more of a single or album. And in the early 2000s, the rise of the Internet led to a boom in digital music sales, so we developed the Digital Single Award and added digital sales to the Album Award to recognize the rise of online formats. A decade later, we added on-demand music streams to awards. And the answer to our second question, The Monkees, conceived by television producers in 1965 as a fictional band for a TV sitcom, and who had such pop hits as I'm a Believer, opened a national tour today. Who was their opening act for that tour? Was it A, Lawrence Welk, B, Jimi Hendrix, C, The Beatles, or D, Kiss? Correct answer, answer B, Jimi Hendrix opened for the Monkees national tour on this very day back in 1967. As noted in mentalfloss.com, it sounds like an elaborate joke today. Legendary acid rock guitarist Jimi Hendrix working as the warm-up for a teeny bopper group like the Monkees? But back in 1967, the pairing actually made a little bit of sense for both acts. Mickey Dolenz was the first Monkey to, quote-unquote, discover Hendrix. While visiting New York in the spring of 67, a friend advised him to check out this amazing musician in the village who played the guitar with his teeth. Dolenz was impressed but didn't remember the guitarist's name until he saw the Jimi Hendrix Experience on stage at the Monterey Pop Festival several months later. The Monkees were about to embark on a U.S. concert tour, and Dolenz strongly recommended hiring Jimi Hendrix and his band as their opening act. Peter Tork and Michael Nesmith supported the choice. Both were anxious to be accepted as serious musicians and believed that Hendrix would lend them some credibility among rock critics and older record buyers. Besides, Tork would later say, it would give us the chance to watch Jimi Hendrix perform night after night. Hendrix, by the way, only lasted for 8 of the 29 scheduled tour dates before throwing his guitar down. Now, to capture the sound and flavor of the Monkees and to contrast that to the sonic metal sound of Jimi Hendrix, let's close out today's program with the Monkees' Cuddly Toy. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time. It was left out in the rain, the day after Santa came. You're not the only charity light that was left in the night.